This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Folks, I'm excited to have joining me on the podcast today, Jeff Bode. Jeff is president and CEO of Mid-America Mortgage, located in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Good to have you here, Jeff.
Well, it's great to be here.
Well, it's an honor because I admire you for many reasons. First of all, you got this positive attitude and outlook on the industry, and yet you show up with innovative products and you really have a tendency to watch and see where things are going and anticipate that and find ways to profit on them. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But first of all, I want to start out with this. How did you get into this industry? Was it purposed, intentional, or was it accidental like so many of us?
Well, I think it's accidental like most everybody else. I was working for a savings and loan in western Oklahoma that was originating home loans for the portfolio and did that for quite a while. And all savings and loans in Oklahoma at that time went broke, so I had to figure out what else to do. So I went into mortgage banking from there.
Well, you obviously have done well. So you started Mid-America Mortgage. What year? And talk us through kind of the growth of Mid-America Mortgage.
Well, actually, there have kind of been to start, first, I founded a company, Mid-America Mortgage, in 1989. It was a Texas company. We originated loans and turned into a wholesaler and grew that business quite a bit. And when DU came about, we were working inside Calyx Point, and they had seemed to have a very large market share with the mortgage brokers at that time. And they came to me with a thought of being a wholesaler that would be inside Calyx Point, where brokers could price, underwrite, and lock loans and close loans, all was inside Point. And we made that happen with Calyx Point. It was quite an undertaking. I used about half of my net worth to build the technology, and didn't have enough money left over to close loans. But we were able to make that work. But actually, there was kind of a struggle with capital. Aegis bought us in 2003.
Forgot that. That's right.
Yes, they did that. So effectively, that original Mid-America Mortgage, I pretty much shut it down later on. And then I decided, after I worked for Aegis for about 10 months, I was not employable. I had been self-employed for so long that I really didn't want to take orders from anybody else. I wanted all the decisions to be mine. Nothing wrong with Aegis. It was me that was a problem. And then
I get that. I think that's a good point, because there comes a point in your career, everyone's career, that once you get the taste of being your own boss, there's nothing quite like it. And it's very difficult to go back. I think it's a great point.
It is. And I certainly found that to be the case. And I was miserable there, I thought, well, I can't blame it on them, because other people work there and are doing fine and are happy. It was really more mindset than anything else.
Well, so then you started, as you were saying, you restarted the company, and talk about the journey into where you're at today.
Well, actually, they bought me in 2003, and in 2004, I was still working for them, and I looked at the product offerings that they had, and I thought, oh my God, I cannot. I was still closing down the old Mid-America. They bought the assets of the company, not the company. And as I was shutting that down, I was dealing with some of the leftover dregs, and fortunately, all the values of the properties had gone up at that time. But I looked at the product offering that Aegis had, and I thought, oh my God, if I were to do that now, and have these repurchase requests that I have with values going down, I'd be out of business. So I decided to stay out of mortgage banking and develop technology for the next 3 years.
Oh, interesting.
And it was, it was by luck that I had made that decision. It was not that I was out of the space, because I think others would have done the same thing had they had the opportunity to kind of sit tight. But what I did from there is I redeveloped the technology in a Microsoft and SQL Server platform for mortgage machine. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sell this off to other lenders once I get it put together. Well, I got it finished up in 2007, just as the meltdown started happening.
Timing's everything.
Nobody was going to be buying software. But at that point, I looked around and thought, gosh, I could get back into mortgage banking. Fortunately, I had the capital from the sale to Aegis and make that work. So I got back into mortgage banking with the software that I had, and kind of had a background in software at that time. So we were able to structure a new business to make it work. Kind of went through some fits and starts. I worked with a broker that we had worked with previously at the old Mid-America Mortgage. And then eventually, I kind of saw the need in 2010 to have my Ginnie and Fannie approvals. And at that time, Ginnie Mae was not approving anybody. So there was a company in Ohio, which was founded in 1959, Schmidt Mortgage Company. And I was able to acquire that company, the whole company, not just the assets, but had the ticket, and we could move forward quickly with the Ginnie Mae and Fannie Mae approvals. And I don't know if you recall back then, but warehouse lines were real tight, and the ability to move loans through to the agencies was a big deal for us, and that worked out well. And later we changed the name from Schmidt to Mid-America, so that's why it's a little confusing.
Well, you know, one of the things is you're a survivor. You see opportunities, and I love that about you, Jeff. And I think you're so respected in the community. And I want to get your perspective about what's going on. I've been at this business for 45 years. I think I've seen every cycle there is. Every time we see a repeat of a cycle, or what seems like, sometimes it's a repeat. We're not sure if it's a repeat of a cycle or in something new that we've never seen before. Love to get your perspective on what's going on in the markets today. And then we're going to get into how you're responding. So your perspective on the markets today.
You know, I like to say history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure rhymes. And it seems like there's
That's a great phrase. I like that. Yep.
And I think we're seeing it's a little different than obviously I don't think we're quite in a bubble by any means, but we are seeing a lot of capital chasing deals that it just the returns are much lower, and it just doesn't seem like a great way to. I mean, some of the capital risk seem like tough deals to do that are out there. But I think one of the things that's happening in the space that we're seeing on the scratch and dent side, the yields that we were getting 4 years ago on buying scratch and dent loans has diminished quite a bit because banks are looking for yield and trying to make that happen. I think in the production side, oh gosh, the margins have just been squeezed down quite a bit. And I don't think we're through with that. I think we've got a good year and a half to go with tighter margins. Wholesale is going to be brutal in 2019 as it was in 2018 because it's a very thin margin. And I think some of the folks that didn't keep their money, you know, in the business from before are going to have a hard time making it through this next year on the retail side. But most of the folks had made pretty good money if they kept those. They kept the money in the company. They're doing pretty well still.
We're seeing a bit of a resurgence of the wholesale market. And again, it's because, and from my perspective, I love your thoughts on this, is because there's a lot of LOs being told we can't afford to pay you what we're paying you. And the top LOs are saying, well, I can go out on my own, and or at least they perceive they can, and make the kind of money I want to and need to. And what I'm deserving of. What are your thoughts on that? Is there a resurgence from your perspective on wholesale?
You know, I think there is the opportunity for wholesale to work. And frankly, I think those guys are not as far from being, you know, correspondents as they would like to be. And one of the things that we've done in this space is through the e-closing with the e-notes. Ginnie Mae is not there yet, but I do think that we're moving quickly to e-notes where, you know, the duration that the loan has to be on your line before it goes to somebody else's line is a day with the e-closing process. So I think that kind of changes the case. Now, this is something that I've been the leader on, but nobody's been following me, so I'm not sure it's going to take off.
That always makes you a little nervous, doesn't it, when you're going to direct and go like, you'd like to think it validated with some followers, but it is a timing issue. But I think you raise a really good point. We're certainly seeing that, that a number of companies are opening up wholesale divisions, in part to help facilitate fundings for LOs that are leaving or exiting out or being displaced by company closures. So, well, it'll be interesting to see. Let's talk about what you're doing in the scratch and dent space and what caused you to get into that in the first place.
You know, it was an opportunity that popped up from somebody having some distressed loans and us looking at that and say, well, those fit into a Ginnie Mae security. And with that, we've been able to make some pretty good money and make things go. But a big part of our scratch and dent business has been loans that just don't fit the aggregator's box, that they don't want to buy, they don't want to buy those loans, and then, you know, the independents originate that loan and need somewhere to go with them. We've had scratch and dents anywhere from TRID defects that we were able to, you know, figure out the cure and get those into securities, move those on, bond loans that didn't meet the agency's requirements, items that, you know, had underwriting misses, but they were still insured to make those go. And then we've also got into buying delinquent government loans as well and make that work, as well as also some other distressed conventional loans. We bought those, but that's been an interesting business. It's not for the faint of heart. You know,
we've
made some mistakes.
Yeah, the key is to find an investor that you can either fix it and get it sold back into the primary markets, or find end investors that you can sell those loans or get those loans laid off to. And you've been successful in doing that. Anything you want to share about that, what you found to work, and then what you'd warn people that are thinking about doing it to not do?
Well, it's been capital intensive. What we've been doing is working with a few banks and doing participation loans. We will fund the, you know, part of the loan, and they'll fund the rest of it. And it's a return that works for the bank and something that works for us. And then if we have a solution to, you know, to move that loan to some other, you know, a refinance or whatever happens, getting paid off or whatever, that has been, you know, how we've done that. But there are all kinds of pitfalls, and I've got some great people around me that know how to make this work. Carol Amphier, our operations manager.
Carol's great.
Yes, she is. It's not Jeff's ability to get things done. It's the people around me that can make it happen. And Kara, Michael Lima, that does the scratch and dent business is outstanding.
Yeah, you really have. And so that's one of the things a lot of people struggle with, Jeff. How have you been able to get guys like Michael and your whole team together that do really are some of the top professionals in the industry? How have you attracted them? How do you find them, and how do you retain them?
Well, I think the way we attracted them is told them we'd stay out of their way, and the way we retained them was by staying out of their way.
That's good. I like that.
Yes.
But it's also a culture. You have created a culture there. I guess you could say that's a culture. We hire good people, we get out of their way. But from a meeting standpoint, from a communication standpoint internally, how do you guys handle that?
You know, it's interesting. We office together, you know, here in Addison, but we allow everybody to work from home if they want to. And, you know, I'd say every one of those guys, you know, 3 days out of the week, they're generally somewhere else working and come in when they need to. The commute's kind of brutal sometimes to get to here from where they reside. So I think a lot of that is we just let them do what they need to. But if they have something that they're not comfortable with, or an opportunity that they see that they want to bounce off of me or Michael Kenimer, we do that, talk it over, and kind of see where the opportunities are.
Where do you see this market and industry going?
I think on the retail side, I do think technology is going to move things fairly soon. I think the agencies, day one certainty or their efforts to do that have been, you know, off to fits and starts. The employment verification has been a little bit problematic. You can't just take an application and know that you're going to get this quick verification done. But I do think we're going to have more opportunities to get to, you know, a 10-day close for all of our borrowers as the thing moves forward, if you take advantage of the technology. I had an LO discuss our digital application. He says, well, gosh, if I use that digital application, you don't really need me. And I'm saying, well, I always need salespeople.
Right.
My thought is nothing is bought, everything is sold. And that is certainly the case, but don't confuse what we really are paying for. We're not paying for you to, you know, type loans in the computer. We're paying you to, you know, sell the loans and get the borrower and move them into a space where they're comfortable with the transaction and make sure it's done properly.
In inspiring your people, it requires an inspired person. Who inspires you? Who do you look up to, Jeff, that has had a big influence on you and that you'd encourage others to study and get to know?
You know, gosh, my parents were amazing. My mother was just really driven hard. And I look at my siblings, and they were inspired by our mother as well. But as I've you know, continued through life, you know, looking around the office. I mean, it just, my people that work with me are inspiring to me.
That's good. Is there any particular books that you read that are inspiring?
Oh, I love reading history and political books, but one of an interesting book that I read that, you know, it makes me look at every transaction or everything that's going on in the world a little differently. It was Naomi Klein had written a book about causing change, creating a crisis and taking advantage of it. And you kind of watch that happen in business. You watch that happen politically. And I think that's been one of the most profound books on the way I view things. You know, it's just strange how some companies do that and some politicians do that, but it's interesting.
What do you think worries you the most as you look into the future about our industry?
Oh, you know, it's constant. It's what happened in 2007 and 2008. It's we always forget what got us in trouble. And, you know, you see that the more deregulation and loosening things up, that, you know, we're more likely to get back to that. But fortunately, I think that Dodd-Frank, as painful as it was to implement, I think it's got a lot of things fixed where we're not going to be completely broken.
We're not going to see those extremes. Yeah. Yeah, I think that the regulatory environment seems to be easing some. I think we're seeing, you know, the Dodd-Frank, while it was frustrating, it is keeping us out of the extremes. At least I hope that is. And we're seeing some changes. But I look at the political environment we're in now. It's so just polarized. But we have such an important calling to families, and we're involved in one of the most transformative businesses that could happen in someone's life, and that's first-time home ownership and retention of home ownership. And I think you're doing an awesome job in the industry, and I'm so grateful that you take a few minutes here. To the aspiring up-and-comers, what would you say? Let's wrap it up with that.
Oh, gosh. I would look around and see what other industries are doing and figure out how you can incorporate the successful things that other industries are doing into our business. And there are a lot of opportunities. I mean, I think this digital close thing, I looked at it and thought, gosh, everybody else has been doing this since 2001, and we're just getting started on that. And I think you can see other things from other industries that make it work. And you know, I think in mortgage banking, we're really bad about saying this is how we've always done it. And a lot of it is we don't want to be displaced from new ideas and new technology. But a way to get better customer service is what it's all about. And if you can do those things, you know, in a routine process, if you can get computers to do those things for a routine process and just handle the things that get off track, that's going to make the customer service so much better to the consumer. And that's what we've got to do.
Jeff, I'd like to get your perspective on the government shutdown. What's your thoughts? How much longer can we endure this?
I don't know how much longer we can endure it. It's been pretty brutal. I think I never realized all of the things that government did, but we've had some specific issues with HUD being shut down, some issues with Ginny Mae. We do the Native American business, and obviously they can't issue commitments that go with it. But we've also had some loans that we did on tribal lands, and there's a unique process in which those loans get insured that it requires the title work, which comes from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but those have been delayed, and we've kind of reached a point where I'm waiting for one government agency to do one thing to kind of appease another government agency, and with that being shut down, we're about to exceed some numbers for Ginny Mae, so that has been a challenge for us, and then obviously the effects for rural development housing, you know, those commitments haven't been issued, and that's starting to affect our borrowers. We had most everybody approved, you know, 2 weeks in advance before closing, but now we're not getting those, and our borrowers are sitting tight, hoping that the government gets reopened.
You are the master of the niche markets. Yeah, I love the fact that you're one of the largest securitizers of Section 184 loans, the Native American lending. Not many people see that. How is it that you got into that type of lending and some of the niche markets you are in?
Well, actually, that one opportunity found me. There was a gentleman that was working with a bank and doing those types of loans, and he looked at our software to see if that's what he wanted to do. But he later on reached out to me when he had differences with the bank, and he came to work with us, and he really does a great job in working the 184 business, and is actively communicating with the tribes across the country to make that go. That is such a unique business, and it's a pretty small business. I mean, I think we originate or we securitize about 45% of the loans that are done in the 184 space, and that's about $20 million a month. So it's not a big business, and it's something that a big bank wouldn't bother because it's not scalable because there's just only so many Native Americans out there.
When it comes to the delinquencies and the servicing of those, it's got to be substantially different.
It is. The tribal lands are unique because whenever somebody on a reservation becomes delinquent, you've got to reach out to that tribe and communicate with them to try to work it out. Frankly, those loans are to on property that is inside a different sovereign nation. You don't have the state of Oklahoma or state of Arizona issues or whatever there. You've got a different foreclosure process. So that's why you have to work with the tribes. It's pretty niche-y and quite a challenge to do. And that's probably why we have a large market share, is it's just a difficult loan to service. But the borrowers, stay in their loans a little longer, so the prepay speeds aren't quite as bad as FHA and VA loans. So there's some advantages to it as well, but it's not something a large aggregator would want to jump into, I wouldn't think.
You know, we talked earlier about your technology background and the fact that you had spent as much time in technology. It would be really interesting to get your perspective and what changes you see in mortgage technology coming in the near future and then a little further out.
Well, David, I think in the next couple of years, I do see the day one certainty and the instant approval process getting much better within the next 2 years, and think that's going to move the needle. I'm really excited for the remote notary bills that are passing throughout the country and what that will mean to closings. We've been a little slow in getting that technology completely squared away, but we think that we've got that done where we can go to about 20 different states and make that happen. And the benefits that the consumer should find with that, I think the busiest and most frustrating day of a consumer's life is the first day they purchase a home. And if you can give them 2 hours back, just the distance to and from the title company, and making it a 15-minute process instead of a 2-hour process and instant funding, that they should be happy.
It's noteworthy that Mid-America Mortgage pioneered e-closings and are currently doing over 90% of your loans are being done through electronic closings. I think that's another example of the leadership you have brought to our industry. Jeff, we're hearing some rumors that some warehouse lenders may be terminating lines because of consecutive losses on some lenders. How are you there to help those lenders that may be losing their warehouse lines for one reason or another?
David, that's a great question. We've got a solution with affiliated company that we've worked with in the past, and we're moving to the e-notes to make this work. And it only takes about 2 weeks to get up and running with the e-close and e-note process, but we can get them set up with a warehouse bank so they don't get done by, their warehouse line being closed. They can migrate that over quickly so they can stay in business to get the shutdown, and close out their pipeline and make it work and figure out what their next transition step is. And we would like to give it a look to see if it's a proper thing for us to do, or if they just need to set up as a correspondent, mini correspondent, and make that work, or just, what is the right approach for them to have. But at least that would buy them some time in the process where they're hung up. And we're looking for honest people that know what they're doing, that just kind of had some earnings problems. This might also be an opportunity for warehouse lenders that have somebody that is in that position to recommend they come to us, so we can get that pipeline closed out with less effect on the lender, less effect on the warehouse bank, and everybody nets more money in the long run. So that would be a solution.
It's a good solution. I recommend people get a hold of you. For those that are going to be selling or needing to sell scratch and dent loans, again, those loans are just not saleable as to the original source, what is the best way for people to get a hold of you and get more information about your scratch and dent programs?
Well, obviously, a phone call to Michael Lima or myself, and we'll get them taken care of. Our emails are all over our website. That's we're pretty easy to find that way. But and really, it's just reaching out. We'll say, here's the information we need on the tape so we can bid it out quickly. We try to get all of our tapes turned around in one day on the scratch and dent business.
Well, when you say tape, it could be one single loan or a pool of loans. Is that correct?
Correct. It's the data we need, the address of the property. We don't really need the borrower's name to start out with, the unpaid principal balance, the interest rate, things such as that, the term and the type of loan, and the defect. We're going to find the defect. It's better if you tell us what it is as opposed to us finding it.
Yep. You'll find it. It better just come out and tell everyone what it is, exactly what it is. Yeah. Well, so what's the phone number that people can reach you at, Jeff?
I could be reached at 214-261-3320. And our direct number is 3300, the same thing, 214-261-3300.
Jeff, thanks so much for taking that time out of your busy day to be here with us. Listeners, get a hold of Jeff. You want to look at Mid America as an example of how to prosper in different cycles. Jeff has just done an amazing job with he and his team, but also he now has this ability to buy loans that fall out of your normal or where you're intending to sell that loan. And he pays decent prices on it. So it's not a complete loss. He should be the best friend of everyone out there. And I encourage you to get to know him. Jeff, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, David. I appreciate your time.
You've just heard an audio clip from Lickin' on Lending. And here are the sponsors that make this show possible.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Are you an authority figure? Behavioral scientists have discovered that people are much more likely to follow a person who is perceived as an expert. There's an important word you may have missed, perceived. Studies have been conducted to prove it. Physical therapy patients are more likely to exercise if their therapist has their degrees or certificates displayed on their wall. People are likely to pay a stranger for access to a parking spot if the stranger is dressed in a uniform. The therapist's credentials carry an air of expertise, while the parking lot officer is more an authority than an expert. The effect is more powerful when a third person introduces the expert. Even if the third party is directly associated with the expert, it doesn't affect perception. A group of realtors found that having their receptionist list each realtor's accomplishments before transferring customers to the realtor, their business increased drastically, 20% increase in appointments, and 15% increase in signed contracts. So ask yourself, how can I structure my connections and referrals so that I'm introduced as the expert? Instead of giving your cell number to every contact, why not use your receptionist like the realtors? Let him or her introduce your expertise and authority. Or use an answering service. They can talk you up before forwarding your now impressed clients. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
As housing prices climb, U.S. homeowners are holding more tappable equity than ever before. Effectively capturing the equity market could pose a unique challenge for lenders who may be limited by the capabilities of their current loan origination system or consumer lending platform. Lenders looking to streamline their home equity business processes can benefit from Black Knight's LoanSphere Empower loan origination system. Using this robust and intelligent technology, Empower can originate both first mortgages and home equity loans on the same system. This single configurable solution will help lenders improve margins, support regulatory requirements, and enhance customer satisfaction. To learn more about Empower, visit blackknightinc.com today.